A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents the Edward R. Murrow Program with Don Hollenbeck. This year, more than 16 million Americans will be admitted to hospitals. To care for them, to help them recover from illness and accident, 50,000 additional nurses are needed. This means that one out of every 10 young women high school graduates must enter nursing if the quota is to be met. Countless opportunities are open to these young women. If you are qualified, become a student nurse. You'll help yourself and your country. And now here is Don Hollenbeck with the news.
Good evening. The United Nations ceasefire delegation is due to leave its advanced base near Kaesong at any time now by helicopter to begin the discussions with the Chinese and North Koreans, and it may be that within a matter of hours, the first communique will tell us what, if any, progress has been made. Seven trucks and jeeps with equipment supplies have already left for the meeting. No reporters from the Allied side are permitted to attend closer than a nearby press camp, although it would seem the communists have plenty of men on hand to collect and interpret the news of this historic session as suits their book. More of that in a moment. Now, we'll get as close as we can to the scene of the conference. After a moment's pause, we switch to CBS Tokyo, George Herman reporting.
The team are apparently on their way to Kaesong by helicopter. They were scheduled to take off 17 minutes ago for the first day of ceasefire talks around a table in heavily guarded Kaesong. A fleet of white flag trucks and jeeps set out for Kaesong several hours ago, carrying communications equipment and other vital supplies, and apparently falling right square into an ingenious propaganda trap laid by the Chinese. Yesterday, American and Chinese road sweepers met along the Kaesong Highway, apparently by prearrangement. The Chinese drew a line across the road 5 miles outside Kaesong and made it very plain that the Kaesong side of the road was in Chinese communist hands. And a Chinese soldier revealed that the road into the supposedly neutral city will be lined by heavily armed Chinese soldiers, entirely, of course, for the protection of the UN team. Undoubtedly, there will be communist photographers on hand to snap the unarmed white-flagged UN jeeps moving between the rows of armed communist troops. Such pictures will do a lot to bolster the communist propaganda claim that the UN is suing for peace. On Sunday, communist photographers snapped pictures of unarmed United Nations negotiators being escorted by armed communist guards in Kaesong. So far, the communist radio broadcasts from both Beijing and Pyongyang have avoided any propaganda line or interpretation on the proceedings. They appear to be following the lead of the negotiators in Kaesong on Sunday, who took a cool but punctiliously correct attitude. But Pyongyang radio continues to set up the fiction of a communist military victory. Once again today, it broadcast a communique announcing that UN forces had been pushed back with heavy losses all along the front. Nevertheless, both sides are avoiding any overt action which might prejudice the conferences. General Ridgway told newsmen they will not be allowed into Kaesong until and unless the communist negotiators specifically agree. This despite the presence of communist photographers at the Sunday meeting. Only military still and movie cameramen will be allowed into today's first meeting. Beginning tomorrow, however, 16 UN newsmen will be allowed into the communist-held city, but not into the closed session talks of the negotiators. General Ridgway explained last night that during the first critical phase of the negotiations, and until there is concrete evidence that the ceasefire is definitely on the track, things are too delicate to prejudice them. Incidentally, the Beijing radio revealed today that there will be 5 communist negotiators instead of 4 as previously announced. Another North Korean general's name has been added to the list, making it 3 North Koreans to 2 Chinese and preserving the fiction of the Chinese communist volunteers. This is George Herman in Tokyo. Now back to Don Hollenbeck in New York.
The fact that American and other allied reporters are being kept at arm's length from these truce talks, the fact the communists spread the impression that we are there on sufferance and as supplicants rather than as persons with favors to bestow, as George Herman has told us, has caused heartburning among some solicitous of the power and the glory of the United States of America and its prestige among the nations. In the House of Representatives today, Congressman Ahrens, Republican of Illinois, protested that the American negotiators have been and are being subjected to indignities by the communists. The congressman says that although the Americans were assured that Kaesong was a neutral city, it proved to be in communist hands, that though we were assured there would be no display of arms, there were actually armed communist troops everywhere. And Congressman Ahrens went on to say, I think this House should seriously consider why it is that every time the Truman administration enters a negotiation like this, it is outwitted, outmaneuvered, and outnegotiated. We should ask ourselves, the congressman went on, if these events are a prelude to another Yalta. Well, the North Korean official organ today began to fulfill Representative Aaron's worst fears. It pointed out that the American imperialists have been forced to ask for an armistice, and there will undoubtedly be extensive circulation of those photographs showing unarmed Americans apparently in custody of well-heeled communists. But while it is undoubtedly beyond doubt galling to be put in the position of second-class citizens at Kaesong, one may wonder if the indignity should inspire all the indignation. By this time, we should be well enough acquainted with reality to know that our opponents are going to squeeze every ounce of propaganda oil they can get out of every conceivable situation, and there seems to be a tolerant and understandable attitude on the part of our people that if it tickles the vanity and saves the face of a Chinese or a North Korean to strut with a fowling piece by the side of an unarmed American colonel, well, we can afford that comparatively inexpensive price. It isn't likely the colonel's eagles will scream with pain. It will be the results of these ceasefire negotiations which will count rather than pictures in the North Korean Gazette or wherever, or the amount of wordage effused from Radio Beiping. Propaganda is a useful weapon only if there are some facts to give it an edge, and it will be the facts which emerge from the Kaesong talks which will determine whose propaganda is going to count. It would seem to be early days for Congressman Ahrens or anyone else to speak of our being out-negotiated at Kaesong or to write it off as another Yalta before the discussions have even begun. The Western allies today made some propaganda of their own, which they count on to be useful in the worldwide struggle with communism. In a series of almost simultaneous actions in Washington, London, Paris, and other capitals, steps were taken formally to end the state of war which has existed with Germany for 9.5 years. President Truman asked Congress to approve a resolution which would give him the right to set the effective date of the formal ending of World War II, and at the same time, he blamed Russia for splitting Germany, trying to develop its eastern half as a province of the new Soviet Empire. In some others of the Allied nations, parliamentary action will not be required to write off World War II. It was done in London today by King George in a 10-minute ceremony. President Truman made it plain that ending the state of war would not affect the continued Allied occupation of Western Germany, nor would it affect the supreme Allied authority over the Bonn Republic. But he did say it will give the German people a new demonstration of our desire to help bring them back to membership among the nations of the free world. More realistically, a strong inducement to the Germans to get aboard the North Atlantic Alliance bandwagon. There is one dissenting opinion on the record tonight from Tel Aviv. The government of Israel protests the action in a statement which says, Germany's war against the Jews cannot be regarded as having come to an end. 6 years after the end of hostilities, the German people have not yet made expiation or reparation for the crimes committed by the Nazis. The president also took a hand in another world problem today. He offered to send W. Averill Harriman to Iran as his personal representative to help solve the oil argument between that nation and Britain. Along with this offer to send his principal foreign advisor, the president urged Premier Mossadegh to enhance his nation's stature in the eyes of the world by respecting recommendations of the World Court, which had entirely unofficially urged that both Britain and Iran come to some sort of working agreement to keep Anglo-Iranian's oil in production until the legal tangles of the nationalization question could be unraveled. But that would seem to be a slim hope. Iran has already categorically rejected the court's recommendation, and Premier Mossadegh says President Truman's intervention comes a little late. Orders have already been issued to Anglo-Iranian superintendent at Abadan to surrender his equipment, hand over his job to someone else unless he is willing to go to work for the Iranian government. The company's storage tanks are filling up now, and when they are full, Anglo-Iranian will have to shut down. And the flow of oil to Western Europe, most of it to Britain, will dry up. That is, unless American oil concerns can complete plans they've already started for emergency supplies from some of their foreign fields. Congress got down to business today on the matter of extending or killing or attenuating controls, and the administration won the first skirmish. By a close vote, the House defeated an amendment by Republican Representative Wolcott of Michigan. It would have ruled out controls unless other indirect methods of controlling the economy were tried first. That offered a measure of cheer to the administration forces who've been concerned lest the approach of a truce in Korea should persuade Congress to drop controls entirely. Now, Speaker Sam Rayburn says he expects the House will turn up with a more acceptable measure than the Senate voted in its 8 months extension, although he is not making any outright predictions. President Truman today passed out some rewards for work well done. He recommended the Senate give 4 stars to 4 lieutenant generals, James A. Van Fleet, busy in Korea, Alfred M. Grunther, General Eisenhower's chief of staff, Joseph M. Swing, succeeding General Wedemeyer as 6th Army commander, and John E. Hull, new Army vice chief of staff. No increase in regular rates of pay accompanies these promotions. The generals will continue to receive $926.25 per month, plus $150 quarters allowance, $42 subsistence, although their personal money allowance goes up from $500 to $2,200 a year. And President Truman today said farewell to one of the most beloved figures in government, Catherine Lenroot, 60, with the Children's Bureau for 36 years and head of it for 17. She's resigning now to take a well-earned rest and will be succeeded by Dr. Martha Elliott. When Miss Lenroot joined the Bureau, 100 out of every 1,000 children in this country never reached their first birthday. That figure has been reduced now to 29, but it's still much too high, Miss Lenroot says. Almost every American mother knows something about Catherine Lenroot. More than 26 million copies of the booklet on infant care have been distributed under her supervision. In saying farewell to Catherine Lenroot, President Truman wrote a note today to her, and he said, "Toughness is a quality not often attributed to women, but the plain fact is you have been a tough and persistent champion of America's children. They are better off for your having been in government." Another achievement of Catherine Lenroot's, somewhat rare in Washington, one of her colleagues says she has never seen her at a cocktail party. In New York today, Frederick Vanderbilt Field got out of jail on $10,000 bond pending appeal of the contempt sentence for declining to name the bail donors for the missing communist leaders. And another contempt action was issued against the writer Dashiell Hammett, chairman of the bail fund administered by Field for the same refusal to talk. This is Don Hollenbeck. I'll be back in a moment with a footnote to the news. Now, here is Bob Dixon.
When you go to a friend's house and knock on the door, you want your friend to hear you knock. But if you knock too hard, you bruise your knuckles. When your car's engine knocks, you know it by the noise it makes. But too much knock is bad. It doesn't just bruise the engine, it can actually crack the piston. The sudden explosion of detonating gasoline slams against the piston with the force of a sledgehammer. And that's why the makers of Amoco Gas give this special motor fuel such high anti-knock quality. It burns slowly, without knock or ping. Just as important, this wonderful motor fuel helps your engine to develop more power and last longer, too. For Amoco Gas is made of pure petroleum that can all burn. It can leave no metallic deposit to foul up the engine. With Amoco Gas, your engine runs smoother, better. You save real money on engine maintenance. For Amoco Gas helps to keep your engine clean. From Maine to Florida, there's no finer motor fuel than Amoco Gas. One tankful will prove that to your satisfaction. Now here's Don Hollenbeck with a footnote to the day's news.
135 years ago today, Argentina became a sovereign and independent nation, broke away from Spain in 1816 to become the United Provinces of the Silver River. That anniversary was noted today by thousands of troops who goose-stepped past President and Evita Perón. It was in independent Argentina the other day that a member of an opposition political party was sent to jail for making remarks considered disrespectful to President Perón. And that's the footnote to the news.
If your vacation is still in the planning stage, with the whole family gathered around the road maps figuring the best way to go, take a tip from me. No matter which highway you drive along, make it Amoco all the way. Your car will run better. Your trip will be smoother and more fun. For Amoco products, stop at the famous Amoco oval sign of greater values from Maine to Florida. Tune in to Don Hollenbeck tomorrow. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.